D-Zone Müller Unplugged, the podcast for everything that gets us in motion.
Hello and welcome to a new episode in our podcast, Riese und Müller Unplugged. My name is Julia Jankowski. On this channel, we are talking to people working for and working with Riese und Müller and their way of working. So we will disclose some back-end stories of Riese und Müller, and not only about employees working directly for the company, but also people within the, let's call it, social bubble. Today I'll be talking to Anna Katharina Meyer. Anna calls herself climate activist and expert for sustainability, and if you Google her, you will find a large variety of activities and projects in the field of sustainability she's involved. So, first of all, I'd like to say hello to Anna, and how are you doing today?
Hello, good morning. I'm well, and I'm curious what questions you have for me today.
So my very first question for all the participants here in this podcast is there anything you have already moved today? So this is about movement in this channel.
And the question is quite good for a podcast of your kind, because of course I moved my bike today. I have two kids, 2 years and 4 years old, and I have a very nice cargo bike, and I love moving it in the mornings and during midday and in the afternoon, and yeah, maybe even in the late afternoon. I'm moving it a lot.
So that is a really part of your everyday life, your cargo bike. And I'm sure it's a Riese und Müller bike, by the way.
By the way, it is, but this is not connected to this podcast. It has been a Riese Müller bike since a few years.
Well, anyway, we will disclose the kind of connection you have with the company Riese und Müller further on. Just to choose three keywords to describe you, that could be it's a climate bet, think tank, and renewable energy. And I'm pretty sure you will pick up these hashtags in a moment and explain them very well for us. So maybe we start with your career, your personal career into the field of sustainability, because you're not only passionate about the topic of sustainability, you have also like professionalized yourself in it. You could also be called, or almost be called, a studied climate activist. How does it sound to you?
Studied climate activist.
Yeah. With diploma.
Wonderful. I do not think you have to study all of these topics as I did when you become an activist. It's more important to really be against or for something. But in my case, I've always wanted to understand and help out in all of these global challenges. And when I started my university path, this was mainly in the aftermath of 9/11. And I wanted to understand politics and terrorism and such things better. And after some years, I learned, or I felt, that climate change was actually the most scaring challenge. And I, after graduating from political sciences, I studied again renewable energies, as you just said, and worked in climate-related projects, emission-saving projects, all over the world.
Well, and you still do so, I think.
Actually, for a few years, 6 or 7 years, I really was all over the world. And now with the small kids, I'm more in the online business of consulting and studying and climate activism. So we developed the digital campaign Climate Bet. This is maybe the second thing I would love to talk to you about. Yeah. And it's a digital campaign. So I don't have to travel that much anymore.
Yeah, it's a digital campaign, but still it has some very analog parts of it. Yeah. So the core is, we come to this point later on. And when you talk about consulting, do you also deal with big, huge companies? And what do you think? What is your personal perspective on the topic of greenwashing? I mean, we find many, many huge companies trying to convince consumers and the public that they are very sustainable. And what is your perspective on this?
Yeah, first of all, it's a good development that companies at least try to become more sustainable, starting with communicating about becoming more sustainable. There, this range, of course, there is all, they can always improve, but only years ago, companies were not even convinced that this was something to strive for, not even in communication. It was just not interesting. And so in this case, I feel that there is a need to change business practices, and that customers care for it, and that that politics care for it. And of course, from my point of view, they are not yet caring enough. And the companies are not yet changing enough, but we are on the right path. And it's important to identify where it's rather greenwashing, where companies only communicate and not changing anything. But my experience is that mostly they are on some path, and there are front runners, of course, and then there are the ones who are, who stay behind. And sometimes it's only because their mind is not yet ready. And I'm pretty sure they will feel it quite soon. That that change is needed, and that there is no win-lose game. It's not that we are the climate activists and we want to win against the companies and they will lose. No, we all will lose if we don't change.
Yeah, just to pick up this picture, we're all in the same boat in this manner. And in my observation, it has already taken place a certain shift in mindset. But, there's still a way to go for all of us. Before we start talking about the climate bet, which will play maybe like a major role in this episode, you're also part of an organization, or rather initiative, called Think Tank 30. This is like a place where people come together, deal in a very special way with future issues. Would you like to tell us something about it?
Yeah, it's an initiative by the Club of Rome. The Club of Rome was and is still quite important in the context of limits to growth and our future way of living. And the Think Tank 30 is a group of 30 people somehow related to the age of 30. So we are a little younger than the famous and important sustainability experts within the Club of Rome. And it's a great it's a wonderful group of people with different backgrounds. And that's, I think, the most important part, with different backgrounds and a strong will to change or to shape the future. And we're having different formats, maybe discussions, but also papers and social media and so on to spread our ideas.
Different formats. Let's pick one, and we mentioned it before. It's the climate bet, which is a very, very precise and a digital project. And you're part of this initiative. Please tell us something about the climate bet. What are you betting against, or what is the core of the climate bet?
Yeah, and we're great supporters of the Fridays for Future movement, and during this pandemic season, or maybe I could say even years by now, we decided that we need some way of protesting, some way of climate activism, which is not in the need of the streets. So we felt, okay, we cannot go and protest on the streets as we were used to. So we need something online. And we created the Climate Bet in the summer of last year with the goal to reach 1 million people from the very normal people in Germany and internationally. The whole Climate Bet is in German and English, and we hope that we can even cover more languages in the future. But we want to find these 1 million people saying climate protection is important for me, and I will do a first step. And I want politicians to step up to this as well.
Mm-hmm. So this word bet, to my ears, it sounds a bit like gaming and gamification. It's not really, you know, like, I mean, it's a severe topic, the climate change. So it's not a funny topic. It's not like let's play a game. But in a way, you integrated some kind of gamification aspects in this bet.
Yeah, we have the feeling that the whole movement needs to somehow be a passionate movement, and not only a movement where it's hard for every participant to be in it. And we wanted to create a space where it's fun to join, where it's gives you a good feeling to join the movement, where it's not that hard. We decided on, okay, it's not enough to just sign like a petition, but to reduce 1 ton of carbon emissions. And yeah, this is not that hard. You could do it either by paying 25 euro in supporting a project where someone else saves this 1 ton of carbon emissions, or you save it in your daily life. And of course, if you ask me, it would be best to do both. But we wanted to give everyone an option.
Mm-hmm. And what is the percentage? Do people merely take part as that they pay, or do they really change their behavior? Can you observe it?
Maybe it's half-half. And it's hard to narrow it down to what's first. So the hen and egg problem, I mean, me, for example, I optimized my whole behavior, my whole daily life. So for me, it would be quite difficult to do anything even better to save another ton. So I would think for me, it would be a great thing to take and use some money to reduce even more. But then others, they feel their daily life is already quite challenging and they have the money. Others, they say, oh, I want to change my daily life and I don't have money anyway. So it's, people are different, are living in different circumstances. But what is important is that both ways are have exactly the same value from my point of view, because we just need to save these tons with all of our with all of what we have.
Okay, so you really appreciate both attitudes, or both
yes
yeah Okay. And within the Climate Bet, you have different projects. And one of the projects started a couple of days ago. Yeah. I think it's called the Summer Tour. And there's the connection to Riese Müller. Would you like to explain something about
yes.
the Summer Tour? And
yeah. We as a team of initiators have one person who actually decided to ride his bike 100 days in more than 150 cities, unfortunately only within Germany. But yeah, we are having this 100 day tour, and this guy, he's quite
he's passionate.
Say, yeah. He's passionate, and he's 100% passionate, and he would have done the whole thing even on a regular bicycle. But then we decided on, oh, he has to carry so much stuff. And we asked Riese Müller if they could support us with a cargo bike. And we are very happy you did. Mm-hmm. And now this Riese Müller cargo bike is our companion for this 100-day adventure.
And their personal buy-in in this initiative and this project.
Exactly. With their employees, they came up even with some ideas where they could save emissions and become participants of the Climate mm-hmm. Bet. And yeah, derived to something a lot bigger than just exchanging a bike.
Sounds like a kind of climate road trip, what you're planning and what you're acting at the moment. Will there be any kind of actions on site, like events? I mean, it's a during pandemic situation, it's not that easy, but do you have any ideas or anything what's going on?
Yeah, we are quite happy that we can do the whole thing. And we're not that limited by the regulations, the COVID regulations. But every city decides how they are planning to welcome the Climate Bet team, and mainly the major is there to welcome us. And then they start their own Climate Bet for their city, and sometimes there is music, sometimes there is not. It all depends on what the people in place are preparing.
It's up to their creativity. And for all our listeners who are now listening and thinking to themselves, I would love to join this summer tour. How can they join?
You can join the summer tour by checking out the Climate Bet, and there you see on which date we're in which city. And you could just come and meet us without telling us before. You could also write an email. You could also put your name on the list for joining several days. And it should really be a movement of regular people, and we want to become more and more people. And the first step is also to just participate in the Climate Bet, and then you will get all the information anyway. And if you're interested in volunteering, we also have some jobs to be done. Exactly.
And what about the first days? What were your experiences? So did many people join, and has it met your expectation the first days?
Yeah, the nice thing is in this Climate Bet, everything can be somehow a surprise, and it's a creative movement. And I like the idea of a major who said, okay, you have this, how we call it, pin. I don't know if this is the right English word, but our logo is like a pin. And he said, like in Google, we want to have our pin on the top of our a town hall. And then he called the fire department. There is some volunteers of the fire department helped him and some members of our team to go up all the way on the roof of the on the roof of their town hall, and they set up this pin there and as a sign for better climate action. And yeah, for these surprises, it's worth working on this initiative.
Yeah. I think. So that sounds really like fun and a great initiative. So congratulations for this movement. I would like to share an observation with you. I'm currently experiencing that there has been a certain rethink in this, let's call it the sustainability scene, although it's not maybe the adequate word, it's not a scene, but let's put it like this. Within the last recent years, it's no longer just about giving up things, it's about joy of a different lifestyle, like about positive nudges. So people, in my observation, also want to be part of a positive movement. What do you think? Can you share this? Can you agree to this observation? Or do you think it's completely the other way around?
No, I think it's 100% correct. And I think that's the only chance we have. Of course, we need protesters like the Fridays for Future movement. That's very, very important. But we have to change our way of living in a sustainable way, which has to meet our demand, or we have to live a joyful life. Everyone strives for this. And we cannot always say, I cannot do this, I cannot do that forever, because our change has to be forever. And it's not just for a few weeks where you can bear with some changes which you don't like or which you're not supporting from the bottom of your heart. I think it's very, very important to change your way of living in a joyful way. And I think a good example are micro-adventures. I mean, I spend a lot of time in different countries. And of course, it would be nice to go there and visit again and again. But taking the airplane is just so harmful from a climate protection point of view. And so many adventures you can have without leaving even your village. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, if you take your tent and just go into the forest, or take a night in your tent, even in your backyard with your kids, can be so adventurous because no one else is doing it. And it can be joyful, and you don't have the hassle of going to the airport, going there and preparing and booking and spending a lot of money. And I have an online blog. Its name is Finding Sustania. And there we showcase all the different options of a joyful change of life forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's not about a 30 days challenge. That has to be 100% clear. And I don't think we have enough endurance to lead a life which is mainly described by giving up things. I mean, as you described it, it has to be, in a way, joyful. And by the way, I love this expression, the micro adventures. And I think this is one thing we really experienced during COVID-19 pandemic, that there are so many things to discover just in the very near field where we can really experience fun and adventure. We don't have to take a plane. We don't have to go that far.
And for example, it's always nice to say, yeah, I want to meet different cultures. But how many different cultures do live in your near neighborhood and you never talk to them. And it would be just nice to exchange ideas or invite each other for barbecue or just some lunch and share share your experiences. And somehow we're always doing what some advertisement tells us. I mean, there is just no advertisement for micro adventures, but there should be maybe in the future.
Yeah, that is really a nice idea. We were striving to make trips around the world and to find different cultures, and we don't bother to meet people from different cultures just living next door. I mean, yeah. That's strange. Funny. So coming back to your blog, I really like the idea. It's called, you mentioned it before, Finding Sustania. What is the intention of your blog? I think you run it together with a colleague, also called Maya, I have in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Her name is Shanta Maya Nandi. And we would be happy if you connect with us, for example, via LinkedIn. And we're no sisters. She has a Bengali background, but she was born in Germany, and she's quite German, living in Paris now. But she and I decided, okay, we both have this name, this same last name, Maya, and it's a very common name here in Germany. And she studied law and is an environmental experience in all this environmental law. And sometimes in this think tank 30, we're discussing on a quite high level of sustainability narratives and so on. And we decided, okay, with this last name, we have to do something for the very normal people who are not thinking about sustainability from morning to...
For the Myers among us.
For the Myers among us. From the Myers, for the Myers among us. And this was actually when we decided to start this blog with very simple learnings and things and ideas. And we were trying to convince people in a very positive way to change their daily habits and tell them that it's fun and that you save money, which you can then spend for things which are really important to you. And yeah, this is what we're doing since more than 6 years now. And for the climate bed, it became a little bit more silent around the Finding Sustania blog. But it's still my baby.
Yeah, sounds great. From the Myers, for the Myers. Great. And do you think that there is a kind of joy of new minimalism within our societies, so that people discover like the joy of living a minimalistic lifestyle?
I hope so, but I'm not sure that it really works out for all people. What I like is living on principles. So to say, normally when I buy something, I have to throw away something as well. So this is my principle. So then it makes it a little harder to buy new things, because not many people like to give things away. Or to say, okay, normally I live vegan because this is just the best thing to do for our environment, for the climate, for the animals, for so many things. But it shouldn't mean that I always have to live on every meal vegan. It can, of course, include having a regular barbecue with friends who are thinking in a little bit different way. But living on principles for me is easier, and I think is more valid for the greater society than just saying become more minimalist. I think it makes it easier, and easy is mm-hmm. best.
Yeah, it's a smart shift from a strict rule to a principle. Yeah, sounds convincing to my ears. And there's an expression called the in-home vegetarian, and I like this idea because it's exactly what you described. You're like, you're a vegetarian as long as you are with your family together, for example, but whenever you're invited, and it makes life so much easier, and still you change your behavior. So that might be a good, like a compromise, but it's not really a compromise. It might be a smart solution to this struggle.
Yeah.
And somehow dilemma, what people feel.
Exactly. And it's the impact is still so massive if you change your daily life. Mm. And it doesn't change much if you go on changing it every once in a while. Yeah. The impact is what you do every day.
Yeah. The everyday routine. And talking everyday routine, what about the bike, riding an e-bike? Can it be a huge contribution to shift?
I guess so, because it's really fun. you can just not compare it with taking the car to wherever your kids need to go. But taking a bicycle is like going for a ride, Yeah, it's every chore is somehow now related to taking a bike tour, a bike ride. And so from this point of view, it's already, I would say it's a great thing, and it will change, or it did change my life. And it doesn't feel bad at all, but for families and for these delivery services, it would be really some very valid way to change everyday routines, because there are all these cars coming into the villages and cities just to deliver some packages, and it's called the last mile. I think the last mile can definitely be handled differently, and this would change the quality of life for all of us. And as long as it changes life in a positive way, I think it's a long-lasting good solution. Yeah, I think there is a lot of potential.
A perfect conclusion, Anna. And ending our talk today, I would love to know if you have any kind of future plans in the term of climate change. I'm sure you have in the context of climate bed. What are the next steps you're planning within the next couple of months?
Yeah, I have many, many plans. And for the climate bed, we really want to be the bridge to Glasgow, to the climate negotiations in Glasgow. And to do so, we need definitely more people joining, and I like the idea of CO2 battles, for example. So maybe two groups of people battle against each other who will find more participants, or single persons can battle against each other. So we want, as I said, we want to have it a passionate, joyful movement, and we need more people. And I hope everyone listening to this podcast will participate, check out the climate bed, and then let's create a nice bridge from the very normal people to the politicians in Glasgow. And we will take care that this voice is handled with care and presented in Glasgow in the most effective way.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for your passionate call for people to join in the climate bed. And thank you very much for this interview. And I wish you a lot of power and joy in all your next projects.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your questions, and I'm looking forward to all the new connections arising from this podcast.
Riese und Müller Unplugged, the podcast for everything that gets us in motion. If you want to hear more, be sure to listen to our other episodes.